Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Have you heard of hyper-realistic human holograms? Holograms so real you cannot even tell it's a hologram? Well, Pulse Evolution has this technology, and their managing director of their medical division, Rudy Mazowski, is going to join us and share with us this incredible technology that they have. And their goal is to be the face of AI. And if they, with their advanced, hyper-realistic technology, I think it could be a realistic goal. And they also do a lot of really neat things with medical technology as far as being able to do heart surgery or knee surgery with a hologram. And they have the ability to even make it feel like it's real, which is really cool. So he'll explain all this stuff to us. But before we get into that, we are going to be talking to Lou Altman, who is the CEO of Next Level, and he's going to be talking to us about the problem with running a business backwards and why companies keep doing this. And he shares with us how they can stop this bizarre, it's not bizarre, it makes sense, but this tactic that just isn't very good for maintaining clients in the long run. So for now, let's welcome Lou Altman to the show. Hi, Lou. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sarah. Glad to be here.
What do you mean by running your business backward? What is that about?
Running your business backwards. Well, here's the thing. It's a matter of who are the most important people you're selling to. Now, I learned about 30 years ago, showing my age, that if I wanted to get the Sports Illustrated football phone, I would not have to be the customer that I already was. I've been buying Sports Illustrated magazine for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, but they came out with a football phone. Now, it was a $4 little stupid piece of junk phone.
But it was cool to
wow,
you.
Wow.
I well, said it was cool to you at the time.
It was exactly right. It was cool to me. So I wanted one, and I called them up, and I said, hey, I'd like one. No, new customers only. Well, that didn't seem to make any sense at the time. And then last fall, you know, just to fast forward, I got an offer from my cable company for the exact same package that my wife, because the cable happens to be in her name, was paying $184 a month for. I could get it for $99 a month.
Exactly.
I personally had never bought anything from the cable company before. She had had that subscription for 10 years. So when I talk about running your business backwards, the question I always ask is, why do you give people who have never bought anything from you before a better deal than the people who have been buying from you for years?
Well, now here's the deal. When you got that cable thing, was that a temporary deal for her, the $99, or was it ongoing? Or
it
for
was,
you?
I think it was a two-year subscription.
Oh, so you could get it for a long period of time for $99, but your wife couldn't because she's already been there for 10 years.
Exactly right.
And that's what cell phone companies do all the time.
They absolutely right. That to me seems to be backwards. Now, if you want to retain your clients, if you want to keep the customers buying from you, wouldn't it make more sense to give the people who've been with you the longest the best deal?
Well, I would think so. But now, do they lose profit margins by? They think that they're already there, so they can just charge them as much as they can and they can make more money over the long haul? Or do you think that they lose more customers by alienating them when they see those packages?
Depending on the research that you go and you look at, and I've actually been spending a lot of time trying to find some because I have a hypothesis that obviously I need some supporting documentation for before I go out to the world and say, hey, you ninnies, you're doing it backwards. You're doing it wrong. Here's my contention. It's just sort of the basic knowledge that everyone knows. It costs, what, 5, 6, 7 times, depending on who you ask, as much money to acquire a new customer than to keep the one you have. And I learned some interesting stats recently. I believe it was one of the cellular networks, their average cost of acquisition is $984. I saw another cell network that it's $315. So by those numbers, if you were to reduce, and let's just use the 984 because it really exemplifies what I'm saying. If you were to reduce somebody's bill by what would amount to $984 over 3 years, $300 a year, $25 a month, you're reducing their bill. I guess I'd put it this way. What other network could ever compete with that? You know, come over to see us. Why should I? I'm paying less than you're ever going to charge me.
Or
it
you,
just gives you such
or
a
you almost
an advantage.
Or you almost set it up like you do with incentives for employees. You know, you get your retirement fund if you stay
Absolutely,
here for 10 years.
Exactly right.
So if you're here for 3 years, you get 3 months free or something. Or you
the
get
longer, the
yes.
longer you're here, the better a deal you get.
And or you
as
get a reward.
To,
yeah.
As opposed to we don't know who you are, but you should get a better deal than people who are already buying from us. It just to me it just seems so dumb and short-sighted.
Well,
because you're because now your cost of acquisition is huge. Not only because of all the marketing and everything that goes into it, but you've cut your margin on the front end on the first transaction.
Well, I think
cut
the
your
bigger
margin on the
think,
last transaction.
Well, I think the bigger problem is that everybody's doing it. So what's happening is everybody's being incented to jump ship. I know
right.
that's like that in the cell phone industry. Everybody just jumps ship because, oh, geez, I can save 25% if I just go here. My service isn't that great anyways.
So what's the difference, right?
Yeah, so you go to another place and save 25%. And then the next time they jack it up and kind of mess with you, you go to the next place.
You go to the next one.
And so everybody's
yeah, that,
jumping
that was,
around.
That was the credit card roulette that we all went through in, what, the mid-90s?
Yes.
You know, they have a better rate, so I'm going to move to them. They have a better rate, move to them. The downside was that your credit rating got destroyed. You know, there's and you mentioned cell phone companies. You know, there's a network out there offering to cut your bill in half.
Yes, and so they're just they're cutting each other's throats, but they're in the long run they're cutting their own because when businesses operate like that, nobody has any loyalty to anyone.
Absolutely right. Well, and unless price is the only factor by which you're evaluating who you do business with, and what I mean by that is I recently got solicited by the company that's offering to cut your bill in half. You know, we can save you money. Well, some people would say, oh yeah, but you know what? I'm more about value than price. Because here's
yes,
the thing.
Yes, I agree.
If my cell phone bill is half as much money, but it doesn't work where I need it to do, it's worth nothing.
Well, yeah, you would spend, there's a curve, right? I will spend 20% more to have better service, you know, this much
yep.
better service. But if they're the same, then it's all about cost because their value is the same.
Absolutely right. And I would actually argue, given the profession I'm in, that it also depends on how you're treated once you're there.
Absolutely.
You know, the adage of you get what you pay for is
but that's
you know,
part of your value,
it's
right?
It's true.
That's part of the value. So they're what one treats you better, that's a higher value.
Absolutely right. And some people absolutely don't care. You know what? I'm saving. I know somebody who is willing to spend $50 to $60 more for an airline ticket for what should be about a 4-hour direct flight with instead of spending, and I'll just make up the numbers, $400 to fly from point A to point B. She will spend $50 less and fly and take, you know, three different legs.
Oh.
But you know what? It made your 4-hour flight 9 hours.
Everybody has different values.
But I saved $50.
Oh, my God. Okay. But everybody has different values. You know, I look for the direct flight. Unless I can save.
Absolutely.
If I can save $500, I'm taking those legs. But if I can't, then I'm not. It depends on how much you save.
It all comes down to how much, in that example, how much is your time worth? Oh, by the way, did I mention that she was hauling two small kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then I might
not worth it to me. Not worth it to me. For $200? No, no thanks.
No. Well, you have three simple techniques to build client retention. What are they?
Well, I can't give you all my secrets. I actually have a lot more. But here are the three that I start with. And people ask me, you know, where do I start a retention program? Here's technique number one, on the prospecting call. The first time you ever talk to somebody to try to interest them in buying from you, you have to build in the fact that you want to keep them for a long time. This is not just a one-shot deal. This is not just, hey, special offer, come in and you'll get the best price. That's a very short-lived promotional item because eventually that special price will expire. What I prefer to do is if you work with us, you know what? We're going to take care of you. We'll take care of you in terms of price because we're competitively priced, but our service will be better. We will take good care of you, get answers, someone will answer the phone, on and on and on. So that's the first one. That's before the person's even in the door. In order to do that, and this is technique number two, you really have to adopt a client mentality. And I differentiate customers and clients very simply. A customer is transactional. A client is relational.
Yes.
I buy gasoline and groceries as a customer from the store and the gas station. But when I go see my doctor or my accountant or my lawyer, I'm a client. You know why? Because they give me advice. And so I trust what they're telling me. It's the key to this is knowing who's buying from you, why they're buying what they're buying, and more specifically, why do they buy it from you? Why you over everyone else? Because if it's just price, then they're not going to last that long. Because in my view, customers are the last in the door. They want the lowest price. And when there's a better deal somewhere else,
exactly,
they're gone.
Whereas
so
clients.
Client,
yes.
Clients, you know, and here's one of the other things actually that I've found over the years. Clients, when you make a mistake, and we all do, clients are so much more forgiving. Oh,
because
you know,
they,
you messed up my invoice. Not a big deal. Okay,
they see you more as a peer. They see you more as a
yeah.
peer versus somebody that's there to service them. And,
exactly.
And so you're there together as a partnership doing the best you can for them.
Right. And you said the key word, partnership. You know, and it works particularly well in service industries and actually in the company I've owned for 17 years, Globophone. It's a satellite telecommunications company. We've got a 90% client retention rate, and our average life cycle is 3 times the industry average. Why? Because we do all these things. Because we remove this thing that you have to deal with in your telecom world that takes up maybe 3% of your business, but you why would you spend 10% of your time on it? Hand it over to us. We deal with it. You know we know what we're doing. You're getting the results you want, and you're done. That's the client mentality. And then technique three, which I've just always believed in, give them substantial reasons to continue to buy from you. You know, everyone is out there. If you Google any of the products that my satellite company sells, everyone's out there saying, we have the best price, the lowest price, this and that. You know what? Big deal. Who's going to give me the most information, education, and value add so that I actually understand the implications? We're more focused on your result than just giving you the lowest price.
Well, if all you're going to do is compete on price, you're just in the commodity business and you're going to...
Absolutely right.
The chances of you staying in business, if that's all you're competing on, is not very high. You have to be really good, really efficient to just compete on price. And it's just, to me, I'm sorry, but it's not worth it.
I don't believe it is either. And it's not a business that I want to be in.
It might be worth it for some, but not for me. it's not a for me business. Yes.
Never been my business model ever.
You know, well, so and it's awful. The people who buy from you simply on price are the ones that treat you the worst too, I think. And I think that's what you were saying. They treat you awful. They'll throw you away in a minute. It's just not a solid business foundation to build on.
And so to touch back on running your business backwards, you've spent how much money to bring them in? They didn't even last long enough to make up your cost of acquisition because they were simply buying on price. Yeah.
And that's what you do when you're giving people the best deal. They're price buyers.
Absolutely right. They're going to kick the tires and kick in the shins and whine and hem and haw. You know, I get phone calls from people. They say, hi, I want to buy a satellite phone. Give me the best price. And my response is, well, our best price is really reserved for our best customers, our best clients.
And that's great.
I've got a Fortune 50 who's been with me since Y2K. I've been invited to their office on 3 particular occasions, as the retiring security director said, to the new security director, this is Lou Altman. This is his satellite phone company. They're our provider. Don't ever think of using anyone else.
No, that's great. That's the
over 15 years.
That's what you want to hear.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely right.
Exactly right. Well, how can people see more of your work? Because this is great. This is what most entrepreneurs, most business leaders need to get their arms around.
Well, the best place to go is to my website, www.next-level.com. And on the site, you can see a couple of articles that I've written. I'm actually in the process of adding some videos and some sound bites and some just sort of quick recording things I've done that address a bunch of these topics. The best way to see my work in a shameless self-promotion is to hire me to come into your business and sit down and take a look at what you're doing. If you know your business isn't running quite right, let's play around with it and see what we find out.
Okay, so basically if they have the resources, they could hire you directly. Otherwise, they can go to your site and they can get good information there as well.
There's a ton of information there. Absolutely. Okay. And I designed it that way because I practice what I preach. If you're going to be a client of mine, even if you're not, there's valuable information there that you can download, read, use, do what you want. But when you want to get really deeper and serious and kind of understand a lot more and have an objective viewpoint, that's when you call me. I think I mentioned that I just spoke at Call Center Week. And the people who attended my program walked out with an action guide of their own making that they didn't really know they did because I asked a bunch of questions and had them write the answers. But they now have an action guide to take back to their companies or their departments and start to implement some things.
Well, that's great.
I just believe in giving people value.
That's great. That's how you have to look at it, because if you give them value, then they're more likely to stay with you. And you give
Absolutely.
More. And just think about it. Give more than you probably will get in return, and then next thing you know, you're going to be getting a lot more in return.
It's simply karma. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Well, good. I'm going to have your information on my radio page and on my website,
Great.
And so people can reach you there. And thank you so much for being with us today, Lou.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Of course. If you want to reach Lou Altman or learn more about his company, you can find his contact information at my website at www.sarahwestall.com or on my radio show page at Web Talk Radio. Now I am going to welcome Rudy Maskowski, and he is going to explain the hyper-realistic human holograms, and be ready for a really interesting conversation. Hi, Rudy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Okay, so what is a digital human?
Well, if you're familiar from the film industry, the digital characters you may have seen on film. But with the company I'm working with right now, Pulse Evolution, we actually have a team that's creating digital likenesses of, I'll use deceased performers as an example. So this is the team that not only did Tupac, but also Michael Jackson, that holographic performance of Michael Jackson at the Billboard Awards ceremony last year.
Okay. So it's basically really lifelike looking projections.
Right. So the focus, though, is to make it hyper-realistic is that we have we primarily focus on the face. As humans, we look at faces million times a week or a year. I mean, it's something that's innate with us. We can tell the difference between an inanimate object and a real human. So as we create the digital human, we really focus on the 12,000 elements that interact with one another and perfect each element. You know, the tear film or the reflection off the cornea or the pores in the face. And all the interactions of the muscles. So when we create that digital human, you really can't tell the difference between the artificial element and the real person.
And it's really hard, isn't it? Because there's so many details that you have to pay attention to.
So many. And they call it the uncanny valley. There's something in our brain that can actually pick up the difference. That someone just doesn't look right. Or the way the light falls on their shoulder. Or the way their hair moves. It's some little nuance that tells us that it's really not real.
And it's you are mastering that combination of all the details so that it really looks real. Like, so can you tell the difference? Have you figured it out?
Well, no. I look at holographic images of the digital characters we're building, and you cannot tell the difference. Again, the lighting has to be right. And it's an ongoing process that we're perfecting to give this hyper-realistic. We used to say photorealistic, but it's actually now hyper-realistic.
So it's more realistic than a photo, is what you're saying, because it's three-dimensional and all these other things.
Absolutely. And absolutely. So, and I hate to use the term, but as we build the asset, so we build Michael Jackson or Elvis Presley, you know, it takes about 6 months to a year to create that character or that asset. And then it takes probably another 6 months or so to animate that character.
So you're
like lip syncing.
So you're also doing Marilyn Monroe, right?
Right. So our business model is primarily to license the digital likeness, so the digital rights from the estate of the deceased performer. So the company currently owns, you know, the rights to Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, and Michael Jackson, but it's limitless. I mean, we're talking to, you know, the estate of John Lennon and Bob Marley, Frank Sinatra, and the idea is to bring back these characters, these performers, to extend their brand. So now they can work in various different venues simultaneously. We can have world tour going on with Michael Jackson as we see Elvis Presley on stage in Vegas or doing a Broadway show.
Oh, interesting. So you're going to be doing...
That's one of the opportunities. So we can do, again, live, basically live, we'll call them live shows. But simultaneously, that's the benefit here, is that we can have him working on Broadway or doing a show in London or Tokyo, because they're digital characters. You know, it's not as simple as this, but we can send a thumb drive to a show in New York and have that stage crew set that up. And now we don't have to worry about, you know, what he's doing in the after hours or drinking or anything else. These performers are basically pure and working all the time.
So they're living on forever.
That's right. That's correct. That's what we mean. We extend the brand. We extend their brand.
Interesting. So you also, I've read that you also want to be the face of artificial intelligence. What does that mean?
Well, if you think about artificial intelligence, there's voice response now, like Siri, or, you know, I talked to a group at IBM the other day about Watson, the computer. You have a voice, you hear a voice, but why not put a human face to it? And we can give it a hyper-realistic face. It can be, for example, we're talking actually about recreating Albert Einstein to teach math at the University of Beijing.
Would that be?
I mean, I'd sign up for that class for sure. But why not have...
But assuming the content is as good as Albert Einstein's content. him, right?
Well, that's the thing, is that, don't forget, I used the term lip syncing in a performance, but we would basically have his lecture in that scenario pre-recorded, and he would be speaking live to the students.
Oh, how great would that be?
His lecture.
It'd be him. It'd be a past lecture he gave.
Correct. But we also have the ability to intervene and we have a puppeteering technology. So we can have someone behind the stage, and actually we can solicit questions from the students. They can raise their hand, and on certain queries, certain words, will trigger a response. And we can actually have him then respond to that specific question and then just get right back on track with his normal lecture.
Oh, that's really great. Now, can you, you know how, it reminds me of the holodeck in Star Trek. You know, you get into the holodeck.
Yeah.
But how do you, can you get it so that people can feel it? You know, like, let's say, go ahead.
No, so that's you're moving into the next applications, actually. And one reason I'm here with my medical and healthcare background is that we want to take the digital human into medicine. And that's one of the key attributes is creating the ability to touch the holographic image. So the what I call low-hanging fruit is our ability to take that hyper-realistic human facial characteristics, that face-building technology that's proprietary to the company, and use it as a surgical tool or a diagnostic tool, if you will, for the cosmetic surgeon or the facial reconstructive surgeon. That's the first medical application that we're looking at. Secondly, then, this is going to be personalized medicine. I can take an MRCT image of your brain or your heart or your knee, and then recreate that organ and have it suspended as in a three-dimensional holographic-like display. And not only is it your heart with your abnormality in there that the surgeon can explain to you, you know, what the abnormality is and how he's going to correct it, he can also use it now as a pre-surgical planning tool.
How do they know how your heart's going to behave?
Well, that's the other beauty of where we're at in today's medical industry is we have all the biometrics of all the tissue. Now we understand, and we're not going to, you know, it's going to take us some time to evolve into the development of a holographic heart or brain because there's so many variables and so many parameters to capture. That's why we'll start with maybe the human eye or the knee.
Something where it's, you know, the answers to all that stuff or the majority of it. Okay.
Yeah. Like the knee, for example, there's two bones and three ligaments and some synovial fluid. We know all the biometrics of that tissue. So now when we develop what's known as a haptic sensor technology, the sense of touch, we can put on a surgical glove, which at this point is still connected to a computer system that gives you forced feedback in that glove. So when you pick up a surgical instrument or a drill and you touch that bone, not only does it touch, feel like bone, but you can feel the torsional movement of the drill in your hand. That's that forced feedback.
So does it, will it vibrate and it'll push on different areas? It'll really feel like you're holding that tool.
That's correct. Because we know the surface tension of that bone and the density of the bone and viscosity of fluids as you pass through those layers in space, basically, because we're capturing, this is part of image-guided surgery, we know where those pixels are in space. It's an XYZ point. So as when you cross that plane, you're going to have a different biometric feedback into that glove. So you're going to feel like bone, you're going to feel like when you're inside the bone, or you're going to feel like when you're in the marrow of the bone.
So when you're cutting through tissue, it'll be lighter, and then when you cut through bone, it'll be a little harder to cut through.
Correct.
Oh, interesting.
So then you can imagine now the surgeon can do his pre-surgical planning and determine the best approach to solve your clinical problem to improve the outcomes.
But you won't have blood squirt on your face or anything.
No. But I did see, you know, I actually, years ago I played with an aneurysm model inside the brain, and it was a holographic image. Back then it wasn't too realistic, but I peeled back the layer of the onion, so to speak. I was cutting into the brain tissue and below the surface was an aneurysm. And it was, you know, an aneurysm is just a swelling of the blood vessel. And I can actually look down, I can see the swirling of the blood through the thin layer of the vessel. And when I nicked it or touched it too abruptly, it ruptured. Now, it didn't squirt back, but it sort of bled out in my image.
So it would, but you're not gonna do the work of making it feel like it hits someone's face.
No. We'll leave that for the film industry to figure out.
There's all sorts of applications for that.
Absolutely.
In the gaming industry and stuff. But so what? How do you see this being a value for physicians and patients and the medical industry in general?
Well, physicians, as I mentioned, I think it's going to give them a great tool to explain the clinical problem to their patients. If you walk into your doctor's office, you can see all those plastic models of the spine and the hip and, you know, birth canal and everything. They're using plastic models today. The idea here is that you can have, let's fast forward into the future. You can have an iPad sitting on the surface of his desk and you can key in and it's going to bring up a holographic image of your heart, for example. And he's going to be able to rotate it. He's going to be able to, with his hand or a stylet, he's going to be able to open it and show you the defect in your heart valve. And so it's patient education. Like I mentioned earlier, he's going to be able to use that now to do his pre-surgical planning to perfect his outcomes. So to the medical industry itself, there's a big benefit because as an engineer, as I develop that new heart valve or new medical procedure, I'm going to use that similar model in my lab, and rather than doing a bench test and then going to a cadaver and then to an animal testing and then human testing, I can validate that design very quickly, very efficiently, and bring that product to market quicker at lower cost.
Oh, that's really quite interesting. So basically, from an educational standpoint, it could really lower our costs because it's not, you're not having to, it's one thing that you send out to everybody and you don't have to have all these. And also, it should be a better means of educating, right? Because it's more realistic.
It's hyper-realistic. And, you know, the funny thing is in medicine, they say see one, do one, teach one. And actually, you know, I come out of the eye surgical market as well, and I've literally seen, you know, last year residents coming out of this, out of academia and then going right into, you know, residency, looking over the shoulder of a physician. The surgeon then gives him the ability to do a procedure. The next thing you know, he's sending him down the hall to do his own case on his own. So it literally is see one, do one, teach one.
Well, in this case, you can pretty much do it on your own at your own home while you're studying.
That's right. And you can, the beauty of having a holographic image of your organ, of an organ, is that you can freeze frame it at any point during the procedure. You can open it up and look at it from a different point of view, or maybe rewind and do it again.
Well, you can purposely make a mistake to see what happens, right?
Correct. That's correct. Right. Right.
Because you don't really know what happens. You know, sometimes we probably don't venture into different ways of doing things because it's too risky. But you could. But how do you know what it's going to do? I mean, I mean, there's some of this stuff we're not going to know, right? Like,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, there's some things like laparoscopic surgery, which are difficult to teach because the image is reverse. And sometimes you can't see behind a structure. This gives you the ability to look behind or rotate the image to see what the other side of that organ or that area that you're doing a procedure on, how it would affect. So, and the idea now is to make this an intraoperative assistance, a tool to assist with the surgery. So, for example, now we can look at doing an overlay of your liver, which contains all the vasculature, all the ductwork, and perhaps a tumor. So when you're laying on the operating room theater table, we can overlay that digital image. So now the surgeon has really like a roadmap. This is the optimal GPS system for the surgeon. And now he can click through different images and see exactly where that underlying vessel or ductwork might be before he cuts to extract the tumor.
And for you specifically?
It's personalized.
So they could, what would you do? You'd scan someone's body, you'd figure out where everything is, and then you'd turn that into a hologram?
Well, that's what they're doing today, even in brain surgery, neurosurgery today. They do an MRCT data capture image of your brain, and they do a merge of the MR and CT image. And so that's what we'll do, the same thing for your liver. So all the specialties within medicine focus on taking the images of the organ they're going to work on. If they're a heart surgeon or a liver surgeon or a facial reconstructive surgeon, we'll take those images, superimpose them, adapt it to our software program so it allows us to do a display, a holographic, hyper-realistic display, and then do the alignment. This is where image-guided surgery comes into play. We have to do a perfect alignment over the face or the brain or the heart or the liver to make sure that all those critical structures are lined up properly.
So this could also help us move into more of a holistic view of things too, because you could, if you have something on the liver and you have something in the heart and you have something on all these veins, you could start doing things of how things interact with each other.
No, I think absolutely. Even someone asked the other day, how would this work for maybe new drug discovery or drug therapy or the assessment of drugs in the body. So even, for example, back to the brain, there's something called diffusion tensor imaging. And now we can model actually how a drug, if you do a direct injection of a drug, let's use brain tumors again for an example, that agent that goes into the tissue, how it flows into certain areas before it achieves, reaches its target. So now we can actually be proactive and determine the best approach. You know, where do we enter the skull? How far do we put the catheter system or the needle into the tumor? How do we regulate the blood, the pressure of the infusion of the drug in order to really control the diffusion of that drug to a specific area?
Well, interesting. So it really can help us move to a more holistic way of looking at medicine.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I know this country is really bogged down by with regulations, and the medical industry is no different. Actually, it's probably one of the worst with the FDA and things. So what kind of regulatory challenges are you seeing with this new kind of really on-the-edge technology?
Yeah, no, that's an important question, because I think there's some challenges, but I think it provides some solutions too. So depending on, again, it's always with the FDA, it's what we intend to claim, what kind of claims we make with our technology or device. It's probably no different here. If we're just using this to maybe educate a patient on the type of therapies that might be available. And the simplest thing is to talk about cosmetic surgery. What's the effect of putting in 2 versus 5 cc's of collagen filler in my laugh lines, Botox and rhinoplasty?
You can show people a hyper-realistic view of what they're going to look like with this cosmetic surgery.
Correct. Absolutely. Oh,
that would be really cool. Okay.
Yeah. And as you know, many people overdo it, right?
Yeah.
Physicians even really don't know I think the better ones do, to predict the interaction of doing more than 3, 4, 5, or 6 procedures at one time. You know, some patients come in and say, I want all the above. I want everything on that menu, do it all.
And then you could show them, well, this is what you're going to look like, you do.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Let's start with doing 2 or 3 first and let the body recover, and then maybe do a 4th, and then you should stop.
Because you're going to look like a clown, and that's not what you want to look like.
Right.
Oh, I do look like a clown.
Yep. So you know, that kind of product offering will have less restrictive regulatory requirements and compliance requirements than if I wanted to use that technology to do image-guided surgery on tumor resection in the liver. Now, the upside of all this is, we've had 1 or 2 preliminary discussions with our FDA here as well. If we can validate this digital human or digital organs and incorporate the sense of touch, so we can actually, in the biometrics of the tissue, and actually do physical procedures, they've given us some criteria on how to validate that system. Now, once we validate it, and that's going to be a lot of work to do, once we validate the system, they indicated that it gives us the opportunity to reduce the patient population required in the clinical study. So instead of doing, let's say, 5,000 patients to validate the safety and efficacy of a new heart valve, if we can validate statistically a number of those safety and efficacy elements in the digital model, we could potentially reduce that 5,000 patient requirement down to 1,200 or 800.
Yeah, because it would just be too much for what you're trying to get accomplished.
Correct, right. So, but this is enormous savings then to the whole healthcare system. And there were over $70 billion spent in, you know, research and clinical trials last year in the world.
Oh, that would be great if you could reduce that cost.
We can reduce it even by 10-20%. You know, that's a multi-billion dollar.
But now would there be a problem? Would the reduction take away the quality of the results at all?
No, that's where the importance of validating our system, because, you know, right now it's a leap of faith. There's 3 things that we're doing and combining: the holographic, hyper-realistic image, the biometrics of the tissue, which is well known, and then the haptic sensor technology, the sense of touch. And we have to validate, and there's an algorithm that connects all 3, basically. So once that's all validated, you know, and we have to show, and we'll probably start with validating against a human cadaver. We can show that the effect that we,
that is correct.
It's 1-to-1. There's a 1-to-1 correlation with doing it to the human cadaver. Okay, let's go to the human living being. Now there's a 1-to-1 correlation there.
What do you mean by a 1-to-1 correlation?
So the actual outcome of doing a clipping of an aneurysm in the brain, for example, you know, and all the biometrics and all the hemodynamics and all the requirements of that procedure, we've replicated in accordance with, you know, in our digital model, as it actually takes place in the human living model.
So it really does what it's supposed to be doing, is what you mean?
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, including the complications. You
know, exactly. That's important, right? The complications are important. But that's a question. That's why you have to start with simpler first, right? Because making sure you get all those complications down is difficult.
Absolutely right. That's right. So we're gonna walk before we run. But I believe right now, sitting here today, that it's probably a B2B, a business to business kind of business model that we have. Because I want to basically work with the large companies in our industry, you know, GE Medical Systems or Medtronic and Johnson & Johnson, all the big industry leaders in medicine, and prove to them that we can use this system even in their research and development lab with their bioengineers or biomedical engineers to accelerate the product development phase. Use it as an education tool. You know, teach your salespeople, your clinical people, your end users, the customer, and then let the physician use that as a model to teach their patients and educate their patients.
I almost see it as that first, just because they would need to feel comfortable with it, and then moving into the surgical stuff.
That's
maybe
right.
Not. You could get some surgeons that are really cutting edge and want to really move this thing along.
That's right. We are. And, you know, the facial, because of our, I mean, we believe we've really perfected the human face and our face builder technology.
So you know how to do it.
We know how to do that. So we are going to start aggressively in facial reconstructive surgery. I can give you one example. I was in Singapore in meeting with some surgeons, and there was a facial reconstructive surgeon who unfortunately had a very sad case. They had a young woman in a trauma case, and she lost half of her face, and he literally had all of her bone fragments collected in a bag. And his job was to reconstruct her face, both with her existing, you know, bone fragments and some artificial materials. But what he asked if we can do is reconstruct her digital image from prior photographs or film, and produce a 3D holographic image that we would overlay on her face as she was in the operating room. And then he would use that as a roadmap to reconstruct her face.
Wow. So he's trying to get his job to be as close to what she was before. Now, how doable, maybe this isn't a question to ask you, maybe how doable is it to get, now he'll have a really good hyper-realistic face from you, but how doable is it for him to match to that?
Well, I think it's still, the challenge we have is to make sure that two challenges. One is, how do we display her image onto her face? You know, he was asking for a pair of glasses, for example. Put those cameras up, you know, put that projector up on my camera let me wear it on my head so it projects on her. So doing that alignment with the actual human body is going to be a challenge, and we have experience in doing that. We just have to prove that we can do it in this kind of setting. And then, you know, we really need to see, and I think the true benefit is he's going to use this holographic image of this woman, prior to even stepping into the operating room. He's going to pull out those fragments that he's going to use in her reconstruction and basically categorize them and number them, almost like a paint-by-number set.
Oh, that's really great, because then he'll know exactly what the contour is of her skull.
Exactly right, because when we render the digital human, we use a polygonal construction. I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, like in Matrix or something, when you look at the
sure.
this polygon, yeah, it's all these little polygons that build up our face. So
it's a collection of it's like calculus, a collection of little things to create the whole.
Correct. That's the tool we're gonna. So it's really a surgical assist tool for that surgeon.
Oh, that's really interesting. So, what other applications are you seeing for this technology? I could just imagine so many. Like, I'm thinking about, you know, how in the with eyes, they can project visuals through your eyes now. So, like, if they have something, like NASA sends a probe up to Mars and they send a video stream back to your eyes, feed it through your brain, you can see it through your eyes as if you're there, right? You
right.
could create yeah. a whole thing, making it feel like they're there. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's why, you know, our company Pulse Evolution, there are several verticals under the holding company, and entertainment is a big one. You can imagine, just as you're describing, even the new virtual reality and augmented reality industry that's booming now with Morpheus and HoloLens and all of the, you know, magically. There's companies out there that have these AR, VR technologies. We're content providers in that environment. We give them the
We give them what you really need, which is right. The realistic, to make it so people believe it.
Right. That's the thing. And, you know, so that's the whole element, the whole industry in itself. Now, medical, we just talked about, there's huge opportunities to sort of drag that digital human into medicine. Education, I just used Albert Einstein as one example, but the education industry is big. Military, you know, simulation and training. And then, you know, we talk about digital avatars or digital humans in different environments. Why not? And I don't mean to be putting people out of work, but TSA, you know, the airport. Do we need someone, we need a real human in there that says, take your computer out of your bag, your shoes off, your belt on. You know, we can have a digital character explaining all that there as well.
Yeah, for things then, that don't need on-the-spot interaction, it's just...
Right. Yeah, you just need a representation. Now the other fun one that we talk about, again, this just sort of relates to putting a face to artificial intelligence, but is we create our own digital avatars. I mean, I can be speaking to you on Skype right now, and you could be seeing my hyper-realistic digital avatar. So it's my image.
Like the best version of you.
My best, yeah. I slept in this morning. My hair is perfect. I'm wearing a nice crisp shirt. But meanwhile, I can be sitting in my living room couch in my boxers, speaking into my phone, which is capturing my face, all those elements of the face that we specialize in capturing.
Yeah.
And as my lips move and my eyes blink, my avatar is blinking and speaking, and that's what you're seeing.
Oh, that's what we need. We need that for me.
Yeah.
Well, that would make us all a bunch of slobs.
I think there's a movie out like that.
Well, you can't be a slob all the time. You have to be good at one point, right? Because when they
that's
create
right.
the avatar, but then right. from there, once your avatar is created, you can be all downhill from there.
Yeah. So a little bit of this. There's always some evil and craziness and some good. So you got to be careful.
Exactly. Well, and that's what's so fun about all this technology is, and it gets back to, you know, people are scared because of all the game changing things that are going on. And, you know, and technology takes a lot of jobs away from people. But if we are smart and we implement this stuff well, and that's why leadership is so important, right? Having
right.
great leaders, because it could really make our communities and our life a lot better. I mean, hugely better, but we have to do it in a way that is ethical, and we have to be serious about it. We have a lot of things we got to do first.
That's right. I mean, a world, I mean, I'm old school. I'm 56 years old, so I'm the old school. I think we're over connected right now. But, you know, at some point, you know, when does that connectivity start to lose the personal touch, the emotional component? That's what we try to do, even in performing. When we look at building the digital performer, what's important to us is that the audience has a real emotional connection to that digital image. And the only way to do that is hyper-realism. You know, the glistening of, like I said, the tear film, or the people pay attention subconsciously to the tongue movement or the moisture on the lips. Those are the things that, you know, when you see Elvis Presley on stage and he curls his lip for that song and his eye, you know, squints a little bit and the reflection off of that cornea changes, you're going to make an emotional connection with him.
Wow.
It's almost real.
So when are these shows going to go live?
Well, we're probably 2016. Again, we're focused on the entertainment piece. We have the rights right now, and we're working on building Elvis. Michael is done. Michael Jackson, actually, the next generation image is done. We're talking to the estates about different venues. And because we, you know, that's the thing, is we want to be cognizant of, you know, of the, that's why we license their digital likenesses from the estate. And the estate, the family, is very concerned about what venue that even, for example, Michael might work. We've been offered to have Michael go sing at a wealthy multi-billionaire's birthday party in Dubai. Well, the estate says no. That's what Michael would not do that. Okay. Well, we acknowledge that and we respect that. So we work closely with the estate to make sure that they're comfortable with the venues. So we will see more of Michael and Elvis in 2016.
So these things will have agents.
Yes, they do. Well, we'd like to think that we're their agent now. We're finding the venues, we're putting them to work, but we have to sort of go back respectfully to the estates and the families and sort of get their acknowledgement of what we're doing. Marilyn, for example, might become a spokeswoman for L'Oreal, or maybe you might see Marilyn changing into a designer dress in Bloomingdale's window in Manhattan. So you'll be seeing a lot more of Marilyn as well.
Well, what about Marilyn singing happy birthday to John F. Kennedy?
After she sings it to me.
Because, who would be, for her estate, who do you have to get permission from?
Well, same thing. There are representatives. She does have an estate. It might be a different entity or a legal entity that the estate establishes in order to manage that asset. Okay. So, for example, if I want to put Marilyn, we have to get permission. I think it's already worked into our contract, but literally as we develop new projection technology, see right now we're agnostic to the display and projection technology. We're content builders.
Sure.
Providers.
So it doesn't matter, so people understand, it doesn't matter if you're doing it through a projection or if you're doing it through a computer or if you're doing it through any other technology you can think of. It's
correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. So someday we'll have beside our bed a display technology. Let's refer to it as an iPad right now. And it's my alarm clock radio so that at 7 a.m. up pops Marilyn, a digital image of Marilyn, and she's going, Rudy, it's time to wake up. Hello.
You won't want to smack her?
No, it depends, yeah.
Well, you can and it doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't matter. But to take that one step further, so we are looking at then capturing not only our own digital images. We have the ability to capture, and I just use this as an example, so please don't read into it. We can recreate, now that Jeb Bush is out there running for president, or even Donald Trump, we can create his digital image, and he can be canvassing the country, giving, speeches and talking at, universities or wherever it might be, whatever venue, simultaneously in 100 different cities.
Wow. So the campaign would be so much easier, and everyone could have access to him.
Correct. Well, it'll have limited interaction. I mean, it's like getting up there and giving a lecture at some point.
Yeah, you won't be able to have that in that type of interaction, right?
Yeah, but think about putting everyone now it doesn't matter if you're wealthy or poor. If you want to run for president, you don't have to have that $500 million or $1 billion budget to go campaign. It puts it on everyone on a level playing field because everyone has a holographic image. It could be on a thumb drive and be played in Cleveland, Ohio, or Miami, Florida.
That's really interesting. So what other applications do you see for this technology that could really benefit society?
Well, the one interesting other one that I have to get my head around, I think, is using it for our own memorial services. And literally, I mean, it sounds odd, but there are two or three companies that have approached us about. So, for example, I can create my own digital image, and when I pass away, I can actually opt to say something at my own memorial service or maybe read my will to my family. Or better yet, the thing that I like is possibly coming back on cue at a certain time in the future that I can speak to my great-grandchildren.
Oh, how amazing would that be?
Yeah, give them a little history of the family, who I am. Give them some words of advice, give them some caution, whatever it might be. But I think that's that legacy type program, I think would have some huge benefits. And one other one related to that is in home care for the elderly. As we all know, I mean, the aging population is growing tremendously. We're not going to have the ability to all of us to pay for putting our parents or our grandparents into, high end assisted facilities. So now we're going to have to basically figure out how to manage those, our elderly at home. So as I go off to work, I would like to have a system that my mother or my grandmother, it'll be triggered during the day, and now there's a pop-up hologram of a nurse or her doctor in my living room saying, "Grandma, it's time to take your meds." So it's a way of triggering, and you know, home health care for the elderly, and to make sure they're compliant when you're not there all the time because you have to support that environment.
Yeah, there's just so many different applications for this.
So many. Yep.
Yeah, interesting. And how far away are you from being able to, you know, like if I wanted my face done, how far are you away from just doing the average person coming in, wanting their face done, and being able to do it in a reasonable amount of time?
Yeah, I think we're 6 to 12 months away of doing that real-time capture of an individual. You know, it's happening in the film industry. I mean, there's facial scanners. I mean, Disney uses it, Universal, all the big studios have the technology. And for example, our team, some of the members were very involved in the production of Benjamin Button, if you remember the movie.
Yeah.
So Benjamin Button.
The one where he aged backwards.
Aged backwards. But, you know, that was a digital human. It was rendered after Brad Pitt, but Brad Pitt was only in the theater for 3 days, and they put a clay on his face, and they did a film, they did an image capture, and then they used those movements to build the digital character. Now, the funny thing is that the movie won an Academy Award for Best Makeup, but there was no makeup.
they had to put it in some category. It's really best special effects, right?
It was special effects, because the first 53 minutes was a digital character.
Oh, wow.
So that technology and data capture.
People, nobody knew that.
Nobody knew that, really. Yeah, that's it. You know, we talk a lot about that when we're on the podium explaining how we build digital characters and things. But so that scanning, face scanning technology, camera technology is available today. We're modifying it so I can capture your image quickly in real time and overlay it with our software program. Our program has 12,000 hinges or elements of the human face, and they're going to line up with all, because all those polygonal figures of your face are slightly different than mine, and the program's going to do an overlay. It's going to blend, basically. So now when I do that collagen injection in your laugh line, it's going to change your polygonal structure specifically.
That wouldn't you say not that far away? How far away do you think that could be?
Well, I say within a year. I say within 6 to 12 months. We're going through a financing right now with the company, so we're looking at, that'll be our first product, our first use product to build.
Well, because I think that would be something people would want right away. That would be a huge demand because people, they spend a ton of money on cosmetic surgery, right? I mean, that's one of the booming industries.
Yeah.
And I think, if they could see what their face would look like afterwards, that would be very helpful.
Absolutely. Or even we can do the whole body at some point. So you can look at, you know, other things you want to change, or as you're dieting and exercising, you can see how your body's changing.
Yeah, so my little inner tube around my belly, I could see what I'd look like, although I can imagine what I'd look like.
That's right.
Oh, the joys of getting older, right? Everything's just lot more effort. This would be a great little thing to have. So, now, how can people learn more about this? You have so many things that people are going to want to know about, like how do I go see this Elvis Presley show, and how do I, if I want to invest in your business, how do I invest in that, and how do I learn more about, you know, getting the technology for if I'm a, you know, cosmetic surgeon, and how do they learn all this stuff?
Very good. Well, first we have a website that needs to be updated. It's pulse.co, pulse.co, or you can email me. If you want me to give you my email, I can do that right now as well.
It's up to you. I can, if you don't mind, I'll have you on my website and on my radio page with your information on how people can get hold of you.
Perfect. And you may know, I'm also an author. I have a couple medical thrillers out there, so my author webpage will get in touch with me as well. It's just rudymazzocchi.com.
You have a best-selling book on the black organ market, don't you?
That's right. Yeah,
that so did I have, really well, and I want to have you back to talk about the whole black market with organs.
Yeah, so it's all overlapping. I've been so lucky just to be in this, you know, being meet with and work with some of the best researchers and scientists in the world on early stage technology. I get to see things that are sometimes 10 or 15 years away from being commercialized. And oftentimes it's scary. So I end up, I converted those into some thrillers and suspense stories, novels of mine.
Well, it shows you that if the wrong hands get into it, we, you know, if it's not done properly, it could really be harmful for people. And so that's kind of what your book was about, right? Is how to look
right.
at this,
right.
which is super interesting. So you also are doing a movie thing, aren't you? Writing a screenplay? Or is that not supposed to be known?
No, I'm working on my third novel. It's sort of a trilogy. They've been compared, I think, to Stieg Larsson, you know, the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yes.
Kind of darkness, or a little bit dark. The first one is called Equity of Evil, and we're actually talking to directors and producers about a screenplay of that first book.
Oh, how great. When would you think that might be out if it does go to production?
Yeah, I think same 2016. We're looking right now. We're making some commitments to screenwriters. We're talking to some actors and actresses that you would all know. So, which is a lot of fun for me. I mean, these characters I sort of built in my own head, and to think that, you know, Matt Damon might play him, for example, I think is a lot of fun for me. So hopefully by 2016, it'll be a good sized production. We're looking at maybe introducing it at the Cannes Film Festival next year. So hopefully, fingers crossed that that's the timing.
Oh, that's great. Well, good. Well, I will definitely have your information up on my radio page and my website. And you need to come back to talk about the Oregon black market.
Oh, I'd love to.
That's a whole nother big can of worms to talk about. But thank you so much. This is very, very interesting.
It's my pleasure. It's been fun.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Again, if you want to find more information about Rudy Maslowski or his company Pulse Evolution, you can find it at my website at sarahwestall.com or on my radio page at Web Talk Radio. And for now, everyone have a wonderful day.